Tamihi Nui, and a very good morning to you, Auckland. You're listening to Keep Auckland Beautiful at 104.6 Planet FM. It's 5 minutes past nine. And my guest today is Rick Thorpe, not from Auckland, but from Raglan. Good morning, Rick, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, morning, Rick. Thank you very much. Very great to be here.
Oh, it's a delight to have you on the show because, despite being in Raglan, you're having a huge influence on what's happening in Auckland. So, but before we go to Auckland, tell us a little bit about Extreme Zero Waste and, you know, the elevator pitch, how you came to be.
Yeah, well, it sort of goes back 18 years in Raglan. You know, we're a small community of about 3,000 people. We had one landfill, which we soon filled up. And then the community was kind of faced with that decision of, what are we going to do? Are we going to dig another hole? Are we going to start transferring all of our waste and burying it in someone else's backyard?
Right.
There was some pretty interesting discussion about that. Some of it sort of centered around cost, but most of it kind of centered around where are we going as a community, you know, and should we be taking more responsibility for this waste?
And is that where you ended up? With that kind of decision?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was. It was, you know, it was some pretty big meetings. It was kind of maybe, you know, 300-400 people coming to these waste meetings. So, you know, a good reflection of our community. And there was general feeling that we should be minimizing our waste. And then, you know, we were introduced to this amazing concept by these visionaries called Warren Snow.
That's right.
Who runs from Envision, as well as Gerald Gillespie, who's now based in Canberra, Australia. And those two visionaries, yeah, introduced us to this concept of zero waste to landfill, and it really appealed to people in Raglan. You know, we could see the sense of kind of minimizing our impact on an environmental scale, but it also kind of fitted well because we were into, you know, within our community, there were a lot of people growing food. And so that sort of concept of localization of food supply and being resilient as a community really appealed.
Right. So for the benefit of our listeners, and correct me if I'm wrong, zero waste is about, A, declaring that most things aren't waste, they're resources, so we want to divert them from landfill and use them again in one way or another.
Yep.
And have I got that pretty much nailed?
Yeah.
That? I mean, obviously that's the nutshell.
Yeah, it is. And you know, and perhaps further to that, you know, if it can't fit within that, you know, if the waste truly is a waste and can't be used as a resource, then maybe looking at its design, you know, perhaps there's something that we can do at the front end to actually prevent the waste from being made in the first place.
Right. Go to the point source and deal with it there, as you say, through design or just other choices. Other opportunities.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was 18 years ago. Just briefly, how did that mature over the last 18 years in Raglan? And then we'll jump into actually how that's influencing what Auckland's doing.
Yeah, it was kind of a bit of a slow start. You know, we at that stage, there was only three other recycle centres in New Zealand, at Kaitaia, Kaikoura and Ashburton. So there wasn't, you know, a lot of experience to draw on.
Right. And, now, are we talking about what we now call a resource recovery center, or are you talking about a recycling collection point?
No, we're talking about what we would call now a resource recovery center.
Right. Okay. Just checking.
So, yeah. So, you know, offering sort of a full gambit of the ability to recycle. But also a home for zero waste education.
Sure.
And perhaps upcycling as well.
Right. Okay. So that began to take off and you had to pioneer it because there wasn't a lot happening.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot happening. And that was probably the most difficult point with our local council is that they, you know, with not having an experience of that and nothing local for them to check out, they were quite reluctant to be involved. And so their preference would have been just a transfer station, move all of the waste you know, in a convenient way in large bins and to bury in the Hototiu landfill, which was north of Hamilton at that stage.
Right. Low risk for a council sensitive to risk.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. And, you know, once again, it's kind of an engineering solution to the problem. You know, so you went from a landfill, which is generally an engineering solution, and into the transfer stations, you know, large bins, and then eventually another landfill.
Okay, so I like that term engineering solution, because zero waste does involve engineering, but it's not an engineering classic engineering solution, is it? How does it differ?
No, yeah, and I guess, philosophically it comes down to, you know, waste actually being a social problem. It's about behaviour, and therefore the sort of engineering elements, although they're useful in things like, you know, residual waste to landfill, or designing some sort of a hooker bin system, you know, for trucks.
Right.
It's actually just kind of perpetuating waste to landfill. And most of the elements of a zero waste program are, in fact, about changing behaviour and taking responsibility for waste. So more of a social science.
Right. Now, Raglan and your crew in particular do have a national reputation of having really kind of pushed the envelope on this idea and the concepts of a resource recovery centre. Obviously, that's matured over time to the point where you are now exporting that experience, and Auckland is one of the recipients. Now, before we came on air, we were talking briefly about you all had a vision and said, wow, if we could do this in Auckland, we'd really change things in this country. How's that happened?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, when, and I'm mihi to, you know, our forefathers, you know, from Kaitaia, Kaikoura and Ashburton's, you know, they did an amazing job at pioneering, and we came along after them. So, you know,
right.
A lot of this intellectual knowledge is from them, and so I acknowledge them for that. But all of those examples, including Raglan, were then rural examples. And so, you know, the people who were kind of knocking zero waste, I guess, in those early days were saying it can't be done at all.
Can't be
scaled.
And
then when we showed, you know, that you could, in fact, achieve sort of 75% reduction, they said, well, yes, you could, but only in rural areas.
Never in Auckland,
so,
right.
Yeah, so this, you know, I guess we were very keen to trial these ideas in an urban situation. And, you know, that's kind of when the Auckland opportunity arose.
Right. Now, I just want to hark back to something you just said, because it's actually a major success. So you're achieving a 75% diversion rate at the moment?
Yes, that's correct.
I mean, that's something to be lauded. That's huge.
Yeah, it's measured in volume. So if we were to convert that to weight, it would be sort of a 58 to 60% diversion by weight.
Right.
The reason why we talk about volume is that's kind of what fills the landfill, fills the hole in the ground.
That's right.
So we feel that that's a more accurate way of measuring it. For instance, plastic packaging, which only really represents about 3% of the waste stream by weight, is actually about 20% of the waste stream by volume.
Right.
So
you need both figures.
A hole in the ground.
Yeah, you need both figures to kind of make sense of it.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Okay. So where else? So when did you start exporting your success, for want of a better term?
Yeah, I guess it's, a collective thing. There's a number of sites around New Zealand, you know, that were achieving between a 60 and 75% reduction of waste to landfill. And so we felt that collectively we had enough of these ideas, and they'd been tested well enough that they would be suitable, you know, for a bigger test in an urban area. And I mentioned that 18 to 15 years ago, there was only three plus Raglan. But now there's about 40 centres throughout New Zealand. And so that network has grown. And a lot of that network has been growing through, you know, the support and mentoring of those original groups.
Right. So just the knowledge is being passed around.
Yeah, yeah.
And I suppose each center kind of develops its own personality based on the neighborhood?
Yeah, very much so, yeah. And I think that's an important element. And when we talk about Auckland, you know, I think the diversity is kind of the exciting part. You know, that's the thing that's really going to make these centres exciting once they start developing their diversity and start trading amongst each other.
Sure, because people from outside Auckland do kind of picture it in monolithic terms. When actually it's a province. It's not a super city. It's actually a province with a bunch of very diverse communities.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's how we see it. There's diverse communities and the opportunity to celebrate that, you know, and take advantage of it rather than, as you say, thinking of it as one big monolithic group.
Right. So it's not going to be a cookie-cutter approach. That's clear. But there must be some kind of broad categories that pretty much all resource recycling centers share. What would those be? You know, what are the common denominators between resource recovery centers around the country?
Yeah, I guess, you know, in basic layout, you know, what we've found at Raglan and many of the other centres are similar is that only 1 in 5 or 1 in 10 people actually come to drop waste, that they become resource centres, you know, and so most of the people who come to the centres are actually there to come shopping. But there's also an element of them becoming community hubs.
Really?
Most, you know, a lot of people actually arrive there and they're not entirely sure what they're looking for, but it's as much catching up, you know, with other people within the community while they're up there. And they might spend 2 or 3 hours up there with their children and some families sort of shopping and looking around.
So it's become a bit of a social hub. And
yeah.
And you're saying that over 80% of the people who turn up are there to shop, not to drop.
Yeah, correct.
That's fantastic.
It is, and it's in the design, you know, again, you know, I think if you were designing it, you know, with waste in mind, you know, then, you know, you would be designing for sort of trucks and weighbridges and those elements. Whereas what we're actually finding in our designs now that we're having to design them more like shopping centres, recreation centres, community centres.
Right.
So pedestrian access, signage, you know, sort of kind of taking elements from the retail trade and utilising them in our shops as well.
And has that helped reinforce that notion that this is a community hub?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you know, the beautification of the areas, you know, so your whole sort of concept of going to the dump or going to the landfill or going to the refuse transfer station actually changes completely. And so, yeah, resource recovery being the, you know, sort of probably the key words. And so people are redefining what those places are and what they should look like.
Well, I'm fascinated by that. I had no idea. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me as you say it. Absolutely perfect sense. But you're right. It's not an engineering solution. It's a social solution. So it's got to adapt itself to the, well, to the community's social needs, as you say, safety, beautification, community.
Yeah, and you know you've got to build them, you know, to, you know, so kids can have the experience, you know, that they need, you know, build turn your book room, you know, your book sales into a library, you know, put comfortable chairs in there. So mums can breastfeed and children can read away, you know, for a couple of hours, you know, in a nice quiet place and nice safe environment, you know, and then develop your wood yards, you know, and your metal yards. And we're finding that our staff are, especially in the wood yards and metal yards, probably about 50% of their time, they're actually giving advice to people about, working on projects at home or advice about resources, appropriate resources to use. And we realise that, we're probably one of the few places that you can actually go to, apart from Google these days, to actually get service and advice.
Right, and face-to-face from somebody in your own community.
Yeah.
Right, well, describe to me what one of those wood yards would look like, or actually rather how it would work. Just give me some word pictures, because we're on radio here.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's a thing called the waste hierarchy, and, you know, that talks about spending most of your time on minimization, and then underneath that is kind of repair and reuse. And then further down is recycle, and then eventually refuse or waste to landfill.
Right.
And so if we, you know, developed our centres kind of around recycling, we're actually then kind of prone to world markets. You know, what's happening with the premiums and prices for metals and for plastics. It's all kind of dependent on what's happening internationally.
A bit like milk prices, they're subject to commodity markets elsewhere.
Yeah, that's right. And so it's harder for our communities, especially the ones that are further away from the markets. You know, the ones down in the deep south, you know, they've got to get all of their glass up to OI Glass in Auckland.
That's right.
So it's it's a long way. So for them, although they're very committed to recycling, reuse is actually a better project to get into.
So moving further up that hierarchy makes a lot of sense.
In terms of
making the social enterprise work, because there's value added in the reuse and repair, the upper end of that hierarchy.
Yeah, that's right. And so if we were recycling, we would be building kind of piles or, you know, bins full of material.
Bulk
and when
collection.
They were full, we yeah. would move those off to markets as, you know, quick as we can, because that's about, you know, cash flow. So what the focus is for resource recovery centres is actually about slowing everything down. It's about racking up all of those useful resources. A visual description of our wood yard would be lots and lots of racking systems. All of the pieces of wood have been measured, and they've got their length on them, and they've got a price on them. So people can go looking for a piece of wood. They don't have to buy a 6 meter length, you know, from one of the warehouse chains. They can actually purchase a meter, because that's all they need. That's all they want. And if they actually take it to the woodyard manager and say, actually, I only want it, you know, at 880 millimeters long, well, then he'll cut it for them. So it's
right.
About these centres, it's about having all of that wood, windows, doors, all of the fixtures and fittings all racked up and priced, so people can find exactly what they need.
Okay, so I'm picturing in my mind a demolition yard, but a highly organised one where everything, as you say, has been measured and priced, and you can literally just shop for that exact bit that you need.
Yeah. And it's also honouring the fact that a lot of these resources, you know, they resources have got embodied energy.
That's right.
So, you know, a shower tray should be sold as a shower tray rather than sent away as scrap stainless steel to be melted down and turned into something else. So often if it's in good enough condition to be sold in that form, then that's how we will sell it. And if it hasn't sold, you know, for a few months, then we might downgrade it to recycling to be melted and turned into something else. But wherever possible, we try and honour its embodied energy and sell it for what it is.
Right, because that the average consumer doesn't think about how much energy, how much water, how much resources went into a finished product. And how recycling sounds good, but actually you're losing all that embodied energy.
Yeah, and we see, you know, there's some stories, you know, in all of that. And, you know, if I just an example, if I take the, you know, 1950s or 1940s couch that was made so strong, you know, out of the most beautiful woods, it's had a lot of energy put into it, into turning all of that footwork and the arm scrolls and the,
right,
and the backs of it, you know, and it was made in such a way that there was an expectation that eventually the padding of the seat would need to be redone, and that the springs realigned.
And it can be reupholstered. It's designed that way.
Yeah, that's right. But if we step forward, you know, to now, and most of our couches are made from MDF, and so, you know, materials which, you know, break very easily and are very difficult to reupholster.
Well, there's just an expectation that you'll put it in the inorganic pickup and buy another one.
That's right, yep. So disposable. And so, you know, there was the builder who was involved, but, you know, there was a profession all about being an upholsterer. And wouldn't it be lovely, you know, to honour all of those and get, you know, those professions back and happening?
Well, and it would create jobs in our communities.
Yeah. So we see, you know, stories, you know, we see material move through, and people always stop and say, oh, I remember, you know, Auntie so-and-so, you know, having a chair like that, or a couch like that, or a hot water jug like that, or, you know, something, a lampshade, you know, and, you know, it, so it brings, it's a, something that connects people, and they have, they're full of stories. But I've never met a person who's had a story about an MDF couch, you know,
or
a $5 hot water jug. Or,
yep, the story I tell is of my father buying an electric drill in my youth, and it came with an extra set of brushes and an extra chuck in the initial purchase.
Yep.
With the expectation that this was going to last you 30 years. This is it. Old man, this is what you've bought, and you're never going to need to buy another electric drill.
And we're told often, say, that the new ones, you know, have you know, technologies in them, advances, you know, to make them better. But I would question that. You know, we've got, you know, a generation of people who are combing our resource recovery centres for valve radios because, you know, of that unique sounds, you know,
that's
that
right.
they have.
That's
which,
right.
you know, hasn't been able to be reproduced by technology. So, you know, I do question that many of these things are, in fact, all about, encouraging consumerism. Yeah, and I think the journey for Raglan, you know, is that we've had those sorts of conversations, and that we now have tool libraries set up here in Raglan and run by the community house and our environment centre. So, you know, the journey to zero waste has actually meant that our we've become quite literate about waste issues, and we've considered issues about consumerism, and we've started to think more about some of these other issues, and, you know, come up with, like for food waste, you know, there's actually quite a big group of people involved in some local and seasonal food supply.
That's right.
And that sort of kind of makes us even more resilient, I guess, you know, as insurance against what's happening, you know, globally. But it's also a celebration and a chance, you know, for more people to be employed and for us to receive and be eating, you know, higher quality food.
Well, and to have and have a direct connection with your neighbours in your neighbourhood. I mean, the very definition of resilience is the number of local connections you have.
Right, yep.
You know, yeah. Fish school for that reason. You know, there's safety in moving together as a group and having neighbors that you actually know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that can be achieved, you know, in the city from, you know, what we've seen so far of the zero waste program, which has been supported by Auckland Council. And we've, you know, seen some really amazing initiatives and, you know, the success of places like Waiuku and Helensville and Waitakere and Devonport.
And Devonport,
you know, yeah.
What do you see there? What do you see there in those Auckland centres that excite you, that's kind of new and different?
Well, I think it's confirmations, you know, that what we've been doing in these rural centres, you know, is more about people, and it's more about New Zealand and less about rural and urban. You know, we see similar stories about the connections between the community groups, you know, as we've just been talking about, that sort of resilience being built. You know, for Waiuku, you know, it used to be such an important port and a real linkage between Auckland and the Waikato.
That's right.
And you know, straight away, you know, some old wooden boats appeared, and, you know, the thought that Waiuku might sort of have that strong maritime connection and maybe, you know, be the place where more old boats, you know, go to, or that those skills, you know, could be passed on to people in the next generations because of their sort of historical linkage to the maritime.
That's right. And actually there's a number of communities like that around Auckland that are former ports. But I'm also afraid to say that we are just about out of time, believe it or not. How can people find out more about what you all are doing with Extreme Zero Waste? You do have a website, right?
Yeah, we do. Yep, so if you type in Extreme Zero Waste, and extreme being X-T-R-E-M-E.
Right.
And we're on Facebook. But very welcome to come on down to Raglan, come for a visit.
See what's happening.
See what's happening. But also, you know, get out and visit those four centres that I mentioned. And you know, there's a plan by Auckland Council to develop 12 community resource recovery centres in the next sort of 10 years.
Right.
And I'm sure that's just going to be the very beginning. You know, Auckland has a population, you know, which could have 100 or more centres of different sizes.
And meeting different community needs.
Yeah, absolutely. And, okay. You know, just as an example from Extreme Waste, the waste that we used to bury in the ground now provides 28 jobs and $1.3 million a year as an investment into our community.
Well, on that happy note, I'm going to call it quits because we are out of time. Thank you so much, Rick, for coming on the show today and sharing your story with Auckland.
Yeah, very welcome, Rick. Thank you very much.
Kia ora.
Listening. If you've missed anything in today's program, don't forget, you can listen again online at any time. PlanetAudio.org.